This weekend, the Quad City Symphony and the Figge Art Museum in Davenport are joining forces to present French Moderns with the Quad City Symphony on Saturday, October 6th and Sunday, October 7th, and French Moderns Monet to Matisse at the Figge Art Museum through January 6th. I'm Jacqueline Hallblum, and today's Iowa Public Radio's iWart Showcase comes to you from the Figge Art Museum in Davenport with the director of the Quad City Symphony, Brian Baxter, and the director of the Figge Art Museum, Tim Schiffer. And thank you, gentlemen, for joining us today.
Of course.
Thank you.
What came first, the music or the art?
The art came first. The show is coming from the Brooklyn Museum, so we booked it over 3 years ago. Although the actual artworks and the music came pretty much simultaneously, I would say, in France.
How did you two get together, and did you approach the Quad City Symphony?
We really reached out to everyone that we partner with in the Quad Cities and invited them to do French things. And actually, the symphony responded in a big way, bigger than some people could respond. So they're doing a whole concert.
I would say it's kind of a no-brainer for us because there's so much incredible French music in the orchestral repertoire. So it's just a very easy match, and I think it's a fun way for us to participate in this exciting exhibit that's unique for what can be offered here in the community.
Let's get a little background on the history of this.
Well, the show runs from 1850 to 1950. So the term French Moderns refers to modernism, which was this huge change that affected every part of culture during that period. And, you know, the Eiffel Tower was this radical structure that they had to fight to get it built, and they promised they would take it down immediately after the fair that it was built for. And saw the First World War, which changed everybody's conception of what civilized society was. So the artists also really changed how they approached their art. And one really interesting thing about the show is that it has the whole period from the academics who were in charge in the 19th century to the modernists and the abstract artists who were active in the 20th century. So it shows that whole history, but it features the Impressionists, who were the most popular of all, you know. And a lot of it was about the individual and the sensation of the individual rather than making art about society and what society thought art should be. And that's part of the reason why it was so controversial, because it wasn't considered appropriate, the kind of paintings they were doing.
And they also went from this style that was almost like photographic to something totally different.
It was totally wild. But the funny thing about it is that their subject matter still remained very prosaic, and people sunning themselves along the rivers and stuff. It wasn't like, if you look at Russia after the Russian Revolution, it was this really revolutionary art. But I think one reason that the Impressionists and Matisse and the Post-Impressionists are so popular is that we still really love the subject matter and the feeling of it, even though it was radical at the time.
And generally, musicians lag behind visual artists. Our trends in music sort of follow a little bit later for some reason. But one of the centerpieces that we're putting into our program is Claude Debussy's Prelude à l'après-midi d'un fin, which is a pivotal work in the history of Western classical music. Most historians and most musicians consider it to be sort of the beginning of, quote, modern music, not just in France in the French style, but more broadly around the world for classical music. It's such a breathtaking piece because it's so simple and it's very different from what came before. So I think that piece in particular is a great example from our program's perspective that really relates to what's happening in this period in France. We are also performing a few other pieces, but I'll mention Mussorgsky's Pictures at an Exhibition, which on one token fits perfectly because it's about art, it's pictures in an exhibition, but he's Russian. So it's kind of a stretch for us in that regard. But this work was based on the work of Victor Hartmann, really a personal response to the artist's work and kind of a reaction to his sudden death. So really a compelling piece and something that I think pairs really well. The orchestration that we're playing, because originally this work was a piano piece, is done by Ravel, so a French composer's take on the work. And to go back to the Afternoon of the Faun with Debussy, he based it on the poem by Mallarmé, which was a radical movement in poetry himself. And it's not so much, you know, a setting of words, it's more images and his feeling from reading that poem. And Mallarmé, who notoriously was very against musicians, composers setting his texts, was totally floored by Debussy's piece and really was very excited to hear how it actually turned out, because, you know, a lot of artists across discipline get very nervous about putting their art in the hands of someone else.
Tell us about some of the artworks that are going to be coming from the Brooklyn Museum and the scope of this collection. It's really amazing.
The show includes a number of artists from outside France who came to Paris because it was the center, including Chagall, who came from Russia. And also talking about Debussy and Mallarmé, Degas and Mallarmé were also really good friends. And Degas tried his hand at poetry, and Mallarmé told him that he should stick with painting. So it's this little milieu. It's like in history, there are these little like flashpoints where the course of history comes together to make amazing art. And so I think it's really exciting for our audiences to kind of make those connections and to think about what was happening during that period. But the funny thing, like I said, with the Impressionists and the Post-Impressionists, is that they were creating this work against a backdrop, you know, the Franco-Prussian War and the Siege of Paris. It was not fun. And then World War I, and yet the artwork, you wouldn't really know that from most of the pieces. I don't know if that's true of the music or not.
I would say earlier on, you wouldn't know it, but once you hit 1909 and beyond, like, the trends in music are pretty visceral and starts to get pretty dark with Schoenberg and the Second Viennese School, which is, of course, Austrian, but it's all interconnected at that time where Europe was about to explode, essentially.
Tell us about some of the works that are in this exhibit that make it so very, very special.
I think the exciting thing about it is that it's basically like an art history class in 100 years of French art. So it starts with artists like Bouguereau, who were the academic artists who were in charge. And then it has the artists that kind of led up to the Impressionists, like Corot and Millet. And there's a beautiful Monet that's kind of the centerpiece of the exhibition, a seascape. But there's really interesting Cézanne, a Pizarro. There's a Manet, a Berthe Morisot, you know, who's one of the female Impressionists. And then it goes into the Post-Impressionists, the Fauves, like Dufy. And there are two really beautiful Matisse paintings. And all the visual arts, because there are sculptures by Rodin, Degas. It just shows how it changed over that period. And then you get to the more abstract pieces, like Léger. There are two Léger paintings in there. There's one surrealist piece by Yves Tanguy. It's really just kind of a march through art history in Paris at the time. And it's the freeing of painting. At the time, they said it was the downfall of painting. You know, it's like, it's like rock and roll music. Oh my God, how can they listen to that stuff, you know? Like the Bouguereau painting, there's not a brush stroke showing. The surface is absolutely, everything is perfectly defined and every shade is exactly seamlessly done. And then you start to see the looseness come in and you start to see the subject matter change to be more everyday subject matter. And the idea of, this is what I see when I go outside, not this is what I think art should be in order to be high art. And, you know, the Chagall is actually a very expressionistic, little tiny painting of a musician. It's really, it's a nice Chagall, but it's tiny. And there's a Haïm Soutine, you know, who was, I think he might have been Russian, but they were early expressionists. So you just see painting become modern. It was the act of painting and the medium of painting became the subject of the paintings very much.
Well, another work that we're featuring on this program by Debussy is Nocturnes, which was inspired by painter Whistler, maybe. Whistler had done a bunch of these nocturnes, and I'm not sure exactly which ones he was inspired by, but it's three movement, Nuage, Fête, and Serene, and they're all these sort of, like, sound painting is sort of a word that comes to mind. They're very much about form and structure. These were more about just things are happening and sort of a reflection of how they're singing and hearing it, like kind of melding time and space, sort of, which sounds sort of insane now that I'm saying it, but that's kind of what it was. And this piece is also unique because he adds a wordless female chorus into the last movement, which is really special. And we're excited about that because we have a very large women's chorus sort of coming in with the orchestra. You know, his original conception was maybe 8 or 16 voices, but you can do it with as many as you want. And so that part's going to be really fun. And with Mussorgsky, it's a little bit earlier. He completed that in 1874, but it's his own musical reflection on walking through this exhibition of this painter who he was friends with, who just died. So it's very personal for him.
With the Debussy and the chorus, tell us what chorus is going to be performing. And also, the chorus is not singing text. They're doing like sound effects.
Right. Today, 2018, a wordless chorus is not shocking, but in 1893, just before Prelude, that would have been pretty new and pretty exciting. And it's all women, and we are working with John Hurdy, who's the choral director at Augustana College, and he has a really nice group. It's a mixture of students and community members, so really thrilled about that. And we are hoping to have a Figge exhibit in the lobby, because our show is happening before the actual opening.
Actually, on October 6th and 7th, we're doing a members opening, so it's only our members that weekend. And then it will open to the public on October 9th, and it runs through January 6th. We want people to come see the real thing, and I think it's important to come. And you see a painting in real life, and you see the scale, it's all different. You know, and especially a painting like a Monet, where there's about 20 million brushstrokes, and they all are just so amazing. One of the things that's exciting about this show is to bring this kind of artwork to the Quad Cities. And that's why we've gotten so much support for it. And it's also why we thought it was great to partner with a bunch of different organizations, all the libraries, the colleges, and to have an opportunity to think about the visual arts and the, you know, music and also literature. There are a number of lectures going on about literature of the period. It's really wonderful. It's just a fun way for a whole community to kind of get jazzed about a period of time.
And you're going to bring in a special flutist to do a solo flute work?
Yes, we are performing Syrinx, which is a solo flute work, 3 minutes long, which you wouldn't expect necessarily on the stage of an orchestra program. And this is a later work. This is 1913. And when you come to the show, you'll experience sort of a different way to open our second half with the solo flute. And the flutist for this is John McMurtry, who's a great flutist from the area.
And the flute has a really dynamic role in Afternoon of the Faun as well.
Big time. It opens with solo flute, nothing else. It's such an important, pivotal solo for them. And Syrinx, too, in the solo flute repertoire, was one of the early examples of modern solo flute.
And we have authors coming. We have special classes. We have a special menu in our cafe. There's multiple opportunities to do things French.
And our opening night Masterworks is not our only program that is in collaboration with the Figge's French Modern Exhibit. We have two other exciting events. We have on October 27th our signature soiree, Fantaisie Française, and it's going to be a lot of fun. and Tim and the Figgy have opened their doors to us to have that event. And we'll have a performance by some of our QCSO musicians, Naha Greenholtz, our concert master, Hannah Holman, our principal cellist, and Lillian Lau, our principal harpist, will be performing all French music to sort of close the program that evening. So we're excited about that. And the last weekend of the exhibit, we have our opening signature series concert, which is our chamber music series, which will again feature French chamber music. And that'll be a really exciting show as well.
And we have two calendars. We have a calendar of French Moderns events at the museum and a calendar of French Moderns events at venues all over the Quad Cities. You can go on our website, figgyartmuseum.org. And so they vary from painting classes to other exhibitions to, you know, book groups. There are things for teenagers, French things. Some of the things that we have here, we bring a number of authors. Jonathan Petropoulos, who is an expert on Nazi-looted art in France and was one of the advisors to the Monuments Men, is coming. We have an author named Ross King, who wrote a book called The Judgment of Paris about the Impressionist period. And he has a new book called Mad Enchantment about Claude Monet and his water lilies. He's a great writer about art in general. We have the curator from the Brooklyn Museum coming to speak. We have a historian from the University of Kansas coming to talk about Paris in the 19th century, because Paris was really the New York of the 19th century. And so she's going to talk about that. And we have a French art history class. Wine tasting, of course. Where would we be without that? We'll be so exhausted. We'll need that.
Brian, how can folks get more details and information about all these extra events that you're going to be having?
Head on over to qcso.org, and you can find all sorts of information about these concerts and events on our concerts and events calendar, as well as any other of our programs, concerts, and all sorts of things happening. And I'll mention it's our brand new website. We're really excited about it.
And we're actually able to present this show because a group of about 42 people in the Quad Cities got together and created an endowment for major exhibitions. So every couple of years, we'll bring a show that's larger in scope and importance than we ordinarily could do. And part of their intent was that people who live here who can't necessarily go to Chicago to the Art Institute will still be able to see this kind of art. And so we aren't doing like a special exhibition fee for the show, because that was their intent, that it would be open to everyone. So we'll be having lots of tours. We have lots of free days. We're open free every Thursday night till 9 p.m. And we always have free programming at that time. The idea was really to give this gift to the community. So we're very touched by that.
And this example of partnership that the Figgy has sort of produced with this great exhibit is kind of, in a nutshell, what the Quad Cities is all about and how we work together to sort of amplify what each other is doing. It's just been really inspiring to see that type of collaboration. And earlier, Tim mentioned seeing the artwork in person, which is totally true. And I'd say the same is definitely true of the music. When you hear the orchestra performing these and you hear, you know, like the brass come in at pictures and you get that solo flute at the beginning of Prelude, I mean, it's a really special experience.
We'll hear more from the Quad City Symphony's Brian Baxter and the Figgy's Tim Schiffer about this wonderful collaboration, and you can hear that on our website at iowapublicradio.org. Thanks for today's interview goes to IPR's Chris Fenton and Alexis Hahn, and a heartfelt thanks to the Quad City Symphony and Figgy Art Museum's executive directors for joining us today, and thank you so much, gentlemen.
Thank you.